This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after 12. It's the last Mystery Hour of the year. Your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. And of course, you can win a board game as well. More details on that in a moment. But if you're not familiar with this feature, tough, frankly, because the phones have already rung off the hook. So a little later in the hour, when we've freed up some phone lines, you can ring in, ask a question about anything you want. And someone listening will know the answer. There's not really any rules, except, obviously, don't look up the answer to a question that somebody else asked, because the most interesting bit, or one of the most interesting bits about Mystery Hour, is actually the qualifications that you have for answering the question. That's where the magic often lies. You get calls from people whose appropriateness for providing an answer to the question is almost unbelievable. It's a question about something they invented, or they are one of only three people in the country who do the relevant job for a living. So that's the only rule. Don't look anything up. We don't like repetition, but I've given up on that. The number of people now who message me to tell me that a question we've had on the show in the last couple of weeks is actually in the board game, which means that we must have done it 5 years ago or 2 years ago, it's off the charts. Which is great, in a way, if you can remember what the answer is. But I only ever remember the wrong answers. So when I'm playing the board game, I'm 100% sure I know the right answer, but what I actually remember is the wrong answer that someone else rang in with. So it doesn't actually give you that much of an advantage, having presented this. Last time I played, I lost. Last time I played, I came third out of five people on the Mystery Hour ball game. And my picture is on the actual box, which obviously causes great delight among younger players. But not actually. I'm not as competitive as I used to be in these circumstances. Just the great charade fight of 1992 is 30 years behind us now. But you'd think if your picture's on the box, you'd be guaranteed at least a top two finish, wouldn't you? But no, it doesn't work like that. Well, at least not for me. Let me know how you get on over the Christmas period. If you want to order one, I guess this week, it'd be here in time for New Year. Play board games on New Year's Eve. It's a bit of a family tradition. And you can win one by being my favourite contributor. That's all. Full terms and conditions can be found at lbc.co.uk. But there it is. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour is underway. Ben is in Manchester. Ben, question or answer?
It's a question for you, James.
Carry up for me.
I have to admit, I'm a bit nervous.
It's only me, don't be.
My family are a bit late for a birthday meal, so...
All right.
It's about sporting feats, James.
Yes.
We've got the 59 in golf, we've got the 9 data in darts, we've got the
147.
Perfect game in... 147, the perfect game in bowling. I'm sure there are others. Sean Murphy's brought this to life recently, because I think he claims to be one of the only people to have had the 9 data, a hole in one, and the 147, obviously.
Is that right?
Yeah, I missed that.
I like Sean Murphy. I won a ton of money once when he won his first world championship. But
I often get called his doppelganger as well.
So, really?
I do. Unfortunately, but I'm not sure for who. I'm just wondering if the statistic
whether you could measure
a most most difficult one to have.
Are we confining this to blokish English sport pursuits? Or are we included? Because, you don't mean like winning a World Cup, do you?
I don't know. I think single games, and obviously any American would think it's an American sport. But
individual achievements that are statistically remarkable.
Yes.
What would be the hardest to achieve? What do you think, personally, what do you think?
I would say a 59 in golf. I think a hole-in-one's more luck, so I'm changing it to 59, but sure...
What is a 59 in golf? Is that a... Because isn't it different on every course, or does the par add up to the same on 18 holes always?
No, it would be different, but on a proper course, it's probably 13 under.
13 under, there we go.
There's probably only been 10 in the PGA Tour, so obviously quite difficult one to get. So,
I like it. And it's going to be something, either someone's going to know this or no one's going to know it. I know that's true of all questions, but what I mean is it's not something that people are going to know randomly, I wouldn't have thought. You're going to need, I'd have thought the 147, but you see that quite often.
More and more recently. And
same with the 9-dart finish as well, isn't it? I'm amazed Sean Murphy's done a 9-dart finish. I'm not amazed he's done a hole-in-one, because your Auntie Doris could get a hole-in-one if the planets aligned. But a 9-dart finish means he must be pretty good at darts as well.
Well, I think he did say it was in a pub with a couple of mates, so whether anyone can actually verify
the Guinness Book of Records were not in... We're not in attendance.
The local Sheffield pub, no.
Exactly that.
So.
Right, you're on. And you're off out for your Christmas lunch now, are you?
It's birthday lunch. My birthday today, James.
Well, are you going to be? How are you going to find out what the answer is? You got.
We'll be in the car for the next half an hour. So hopefully, Sean rings in.
And I don't care what he. There he is. That's him. Happy birthday, Ben. That was a Nick Abbott copyrighted little happy birthday. And let's get Ben an answer. What's the hardest thing to do in the context? It's almost indoor league sports, but it's not quite because of the golf, isn't it? Like individual sports that have like a gold standard achievement, whether it's the maximum break in snooker or the 9-dart finish in darts or the 13 under on the golf course. Is there any way, and you can add something to that, I can't think what you might add to it off the top of my head, but the hardest to achieve, and it's something you do on your own, that's the crucial point, because it's not like getting six love in tennis or winning a game of tennis without the opponent taking a point, because that's variable according to somebody else, entirely down to you. You and a ball, or you and three darts. What is the? I love that. So the perfect game by a pitcher in baseball. Again, that's no use to me, is it? Because that depends on the batsman, the batter. So that I love that question. I absolutely love that question. I'm also conscious at this stage of my life that I am unlikely, in fact, I am certain never to achieve any of them. Whereas when I was 15, instead of 50, I probably would have thought that certainly a 9-dart finish would have been within my reach one day. Possibly never a 147. No, I remember being delighted when I got into double figures. William's in Purley. William, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
I was just wondering, James, which private individual in the whole United Kingdom, not the National Trust or the Royal Family or the government, can say they've got the biggest house in the whole country?
That's a good question, that.
I know that Blenheim Palace and Howard Castle, they're not owned by the National Trust, they're owned by private people, so I wonder maybe it's one of them. If you had a house that was bigger than Blenheim Palace, it'd be pretty big, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be, but sometimes the family still lives in them, don't they? But they've given it over to the... I don't know why, I've got a feeling there's a house in Yorkshire, oddly, that I just think this might have come up in a pub quiz or something like that. It looks a bit like Castle Howard, but it's not Castle Howard. And from left to right, it's absolutely huge. But I do not know whether it is privately owned or not. I think it is.
If you Google this, James, if you Google this, you probably get about 10 different answers, and only one of them be right.
Okay.
What I'm saying, you'd probably need someone in the know.
Biggest.
Maybe someone who works for the council or something, or the government who actually knows this.
I don't, or it could be just a quiz expert would know it, because it's big. The biggest privately owned house in the UK.
Yeah, who owns it? And where is it? I could go and see it then, it'd be one for the bucket list.
Well, you might not be able to go and see it, you prude, because it's privately owned, isn't it?
Surely you could stand outside it, on the road.
If I owned the biggest house in the UK, I wouldn't want plebs like you turning up, interfering with my peace of mind. I'd have a whopping great wall, build a wall. I'd have a huge... No, I don't know. It's a great question, though. I should try and find out for you. Well, it's definitely not Buckingham Palace. I can tell you that for nothing.
Well, that's not about a royal family. This is going to be a private person who pays their own...
Yeah, no, an individual, the biggest privately owned house in the UK, and then we'd find out who the individual that owns it is. I like that question. I don't think we've ever had it before. Thank you, William. I don't think we've had Ben's question before either. Chris is in Dartford. Chris, question or answer?
It's a question. Good afternoon, James. Hello. Merry Christmas to you.
Same to you too. What's the question?
Okay, the question is, I've been blind for nearly 5-6 years now, and it's a question that I've wondered for a long time. Can blind people, or partially sighted, I think is the right term, have hallucinations? Because I believe, and I've thought about this a lot, I know that when you dream, I do dream, and I can see things in my dreams when I'm asleep, but hallucinations are different. So, for example, you in your studio right now, if something brought on a hallucination, you would see, I don't know, something dancing around your studio. That would be a hallucination. So, because I can't see anything at all, could I have a hallucination?
So you mean... Something that would come, the equivalent of something coming into my field of vision that isn't really there.
Well, yeah, like for me, for example, I'm sat at home in my living room and I can't mention certain things because obviously your research, I understand why. But if something brought on a hallucination for me right now,
was the producer worried about you mentioning LSD or something like that?
I don't know if I can say it.
No, yeah, I just wondered, because they're very cautious. They're much more cautious than I am. I mean, you're certainly not, I mean, it is illegal, and don't, kid, don't do drugs. But I mean, something that
you might have with your fried breakfast.
Yeah, so the magic variety. Yeah, so would you...
I'm not into that.
No, well, clearly you're not, otherwise you wouldn't need to ask me, would you? You'd be able to find out for yourself.
But if I had them right now, which I'm not, and I don't condone it to anyone... Just
no, same, yeah, absolutely not.
But if I started having hallucinations right now, would I
have
hallucinations?
What can I ask, what do you see normally? Is it just a redness?
Nothing at all. It's complete...
darkness?
It's complete... Yeah, complete darkness. Yeah, nothing there at all. Yeah.
Well, So you could have like a sort of weird little fluorescent gnome or something like that could start dancing in you. That's what we're talking about, isn't it? So you're awake.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I would see it, because it's different to a dream where you're asleep.
But
you're awake. I don't know. This is it. I don't want to test it because, you know, it might go a bit wrong.
Yeah. Well, you can have audio hallucinations as well. You can have auditory hallucinations as well. So we'll find out. Can somebody who can't see anything have hallucinations?
And can I just say to you as well, James, while you're there, if you don't mind?
No, of course.
When I lost my eyesight 5-6 years ago, I discovered your station and you, and I just want to say, I know it's Christmas and it sounds a bit cheesy, but because of you guys, and especially yourself, mate, you know, you've been really useful to me.
Gosh.
I listen to you a lot. I get all my news from you. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad.
Yeah.
But you've really helped me through, mate. So I just want to say, you know, thanks a lot to you and all your team. So thank you very much, mate.
But not often I'm lost for words. Thank you, Chris. And
cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
Cheers, yourself. Shall we hug it out? Let's hug it out, yeah?
Let's
have a radio hug. Seriously, you got me right in the feels there. Take it easy, man, honestly.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Cheers, Chris. God bless. It's 12:16.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
17 minutes after 12 is the time. What is the hardest sporting feat an individual can achieve? I'm not having that. The 147 doesn't count because it depends on how the other player splits the pack. I don't think we're going to be that pedantic about it because, you know, I don't know. It's not up to me. But we were thinking of things like a maximum break in snooker or a 9-dart finish or a 13 under par round of golf. I can't think of anything else now. I don't play golf. But I'm intrigued by the other two. What else would you put on it? I mean, I'd like to do coin catching off my elbow, but I don't think that counts as a sport, does it? Who owns the biggest house in the United Kingdom? An individual, the National Trust or the royal family? None of that counts. And can people who can't see have visual hallucinations? That's a question for Chris, who is going to obviously go down as one of my most unforgettable callers of all time. Thank you, Chris. The number you need to answer any of those questions, or indeed to ask one of your own, is 0345 6060973. Martin is in Pinner. Martin, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
Two-part question, really, about cheeses, specifically mouldy cheeses. Now, I'm a lover of a blue cheese. I'm sure you are.
Me too. Right? Hey, do you know what I did last night?
Go on.
So, yeah, I'm doing Christmas dinner again, but I like sprouts the rest of the time. But I just fancied sprouts last night. I didn't really want anything else. And I got some pancetta in the fridge because on Christmas Day I like to do them with chestnuts and pancetta.
Yeah,
I grated Stilton over it.
Well, there you go. We're on the same park here.
A bit of butter and then some Stilton on the sprouts with pancetta and chestnuts. I don't think I can do it on Christmas Day because there's just so much going on. But God, was that good. I think I might have invented a new way of serving sprouts. It was absolutely delicious. Anyway, we digress.
Okay, right. Yes. So, I love a bit of mouldy cheese, and these cheeses are naturally mouldy, aren't they? I've written them down here. You've got your Stilton, your Gorgonzola, Dolce Latte, Danish Blue. Now, you eat those with impunity, and they're mouldy.
Yeah.
But can you eat a piece of cheese that's, say, not specifically been made mouldy? Like, can you eat a piece of cheese that's been in the fridge and it's gone yellow or green and it's cheddar?
Yeah, or can you just cut the manky bits?
I mean, I would never throw a piece of cheese away that was mouldy. Really? Cheddar. I'd cut it off and I'd eat the stuff that wasn't mouldy.
Okay.
But could I just, if I wanted to, blast through the whole thing and eat all the mould? Or is some mould good, some mould bad?
I'd have thought that some mould was bad, wouldn't you?
I would have thought instinctively, but is it?
I don't know
people who've thrown cheese away that's mouldy, and I've said to them, you mustn't throw that away. You're lobbing a fiver's worth of cheddar away there because it's got a bit of green on it.
Slice the green off. You wouldn't eat the green bit on the cheddar, but you want to know whether you'd be all right if you did.
Exactly.
That is a brilliant question.
This time of year.
The people are buying cheese wheels. We're moving now into the realms of public service broadcasting, I think, Martin, with this sort of question. This is essential information that must be known. And I'm going to hold the bar quite high on who is qualified to answer this. I'm looking for at least a master cheesemaker.
Yes, at least.
You're on.
Or a chemist of some description.
Yeah. Yeah. We shall find out. I like it. Thank you, Martin. Make mind how you go. Hungry now. I might have some cheese for lunch. I tell you what, though, that Sprouts recipe, thank me later. Unbelievable. Daryl's in Taunton. Daryl, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
How did Jesus find people in his area within his time named Matthew, Luke, John, etc.?
Yeah.
They're very Western names.
Well, I mean, these are the Western varieties of the same root name. They're like translations of names. So,
right.
So Luke, I think was he'd have been Greek, wouldn't he? Was he from Antioch? So he'd have been a Greek speaker, Saint Luke.
I don't know, but like Judas isn't a traditional Western name, is it? But the others are.
No, but we have Jude.
Oh, yeah.
Also, the reason why we haven't anglicised Judas is because no one would want to call their kid Judas, Daryl. Was there an apostle called Daryl?
No.
So I think Luke, to use Luke as an example, it would have been Lucas, Yannis, Peter, I don't know who Peter would have been. But but what we see in our English Bibles are not the names they would have been known by to their mates.
Oh, so it wasn't like westernised for the...
No, he didn't meet someone called John next to the Sea of Galilee.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You know, it just seemed a bit
odd. No, he didn't meet someone called... That's why there's no Saint Bob.
Yeah.
Or Saint Cliff.
or Daryl, yeah.
Or Saint Daryl. Well, there might be a saint. I don't know about that, but no, I'm pretty sure that you're looking at Hellenistic Jews or people that would have had names of Latin or Greek origin, and therefore they'd be just adapted, or even Hebrew. I don't know what Luke would be in Hebrew because I don't have any knowledge of it. But they definitely weren't called John and Luke. When Jesus met them and he said, "Hey, I'm Jesus," they didn't go, "Oh, nice to meet you, Jesus. I'm John."
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah,
you know what you've just done, don't you?
Go on.
You've just gone from Jesus to Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I'm going to do when I retire. I'm going to open a delicatessen in the Middle East called Jesus of Nazareth. I'll get my coat. Thank you, Daryl. Round of applause for me on that one. Aramaic or whatever, but the point is that they weren't called John. Anand is in Harrow. Anand, question or answer?
Answer, please.
Carry on.
It's with regards to the visual hallucinations.
Oh, yes.
So they are fairly common, mainly with people who have macular degeneration, possibly with Parkinson's as well.
Okay.
But in short, yes, you can have visual hallucinations, even though you are registered partially sighted or severely sight impaired.
So you would have no vision at all, but...
Yep.
Something could come into your field of vision, for want of a better phrase, that simply wasn't there. Like a little dancing gnome or a laughing gnome.
So, yes. However, most people who are registered as partially sighted or severely sight impaired, i.e. blind, they still have or may have a little bit of vision, whether it's 5-10% or even more than that. So they have... Their register's blind, but they still have a little bit of sight.
Yeah, but Chris, I think, has none. I think he was pretty clear that he 5 or 6 years ago when it started to deteriorate, it's now reached zero or whatever the correct medical term would be. So can he still hallucinate?
So possibly. It depends on what's actually happening with his eyes.
What, he's out for breakfast?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes. I see. So we'd need to know. I should have asked him what caused his deterioration then in order to give him a tailor-made answer. But the objective answer to the question of can people who can't see have hallucinations? The answer is yes.
Yeah, and I think he said he was registered as partially sighted, which means that he would probably have some more vision than somebody who is registered as what was blind or severely sight impaired.
Qualifications?
Optometrist.
Yeah, that'll do, won't it? Yeah, it has to. Nice work. No, nice one. Have this from me. There we go.
Thank you very much.
Forgive me for this question, but Chris certainly touched upon it. What about drug-induced hallucinations? That would still fit under the same category, would it?
Possibly.
So if someone takes a bunch of mushrooms and they see, for example, looking at an album cover and all the, like the Sgt. Pepper's album cover and all the people on it start actually dancing, that's a hallucination. If you can't, could you have the equivalent of a little gnome appearing out of nowhere in your field of vision if you took drugs?
So I've the three types of or three experiences which my patients have spoken to me about. One said that she sees a cat playing with a ball of wool. Another one saw soldiers running through her room.
Wow.
Another guy used to see animals jumping out of the wall and over his bed.
And were they all off their faces?
No, they were. Not when I saw them, they went. Okay. I don't know what was happening at night.
No, I just wondered. I mean, there it is. Conclusive proof. And once again, I'd remind you that I don't need to remind you, obviously, that illegal drugs will get you into all sorts of trouble in all sorts of ways. We gave him a round of applause, did we? Yeah, well done. Thank you, Anand. Crikey. Sarah's in Birmingham. Sarah, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
About the sporting question.
Yeah.
My brother is a golf professional and has been for 30-odd years or so.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a conversation with him about what was the most difficult sport to play, and it was always my assumption that it was golf.
Right.
And
really? Golf's easy. What are you laughing for? It's really, really easy.
Golf
is one of the easiest games in the world. You've literally just got to hit a ball with a stick.
Anyway, he said to me, no, golf is the second most difficult sport to play.
He's yanking your chain, seriously.
No, seriously,
All right.
And that in his opinion, not just him, but also his community of golf professionals, and they've had this discussion multiple times, and that basically they came to the conclusion that the most difficult sport to play is pole vault. For various different reasons.
Yeah.
That there are different components of the pole vault that all have to come together at the exact same time that the speed of the run-up, the placement of the pole, the angle as you attempt to go over the bar, the weather conditions, that there's various different things where everything has to be in complete...
Yeah, I've got two problems with this, Sarah. Problem number one is that I don't think that answers the question, because it's the achievement itself. So, I could do a pole vault really badly, and I've done a pole vault. So it's like, what's the hardest thing to achieve, not what's the hardest sport. So what's the pole vaulting equivalent of a maximum break? It would be the world record. But you could you could beat the world record tomorrow. So it's not a permanent achievement that could be statistically.
Not in my case.
So that's problem number. It's not in my case either. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is that your brother's talking absolute gibberish. Think about it. So here's a ball. Here's a club, right? You've got them, right? You've got them in your hands.
Well, I've tried.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's
a bloody great stick, and here's a fence you've got to jump over. There's no earthly way that golf is the second hardest thing to do after pole vaulting.
I beg to differ.
To differ. What about riding a unicycle?
I've never had a go at that one.
No, well, I'll tell you now, it's harder than blinking golf.
I think to play it at the very highest level.
That's not what we're asking.
No, fair enough. I'll give it a go.
No, I love it. In fact, we don't do enough wrong answers on the programme anymore. I need wrong answers for the next generation of the board game. You've got to have wrong answers. So someone next Christmas, if we get the booster kit out, someone will read out this question, and someone will say it's pole vaulting.
Well, at least I'm making you laugh.
It's pole vaulting, which is marginally harder than golf.
Well, that's what he told me.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Have you bought him a Christmas present yet?
No, he doesn't live in this country anymore.
Just as well.
For nearly 3 years.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, next time you see him, give him a slap from me. That's outrageous. Outrageous misinformation. That's fake news. Oh, dear. It is 12:30. Tim Humphreys here now with your headlines.
So, will it be skiing? Or Christmas markets on a city break? Skiing or a city break? Some problems are good problems to have. Especially with flights this winter from £29.99 one way and package holidays from £159 per person. Get booking at easyjet.com. Selected dates, holidays at all protected based on 2 adults for 3 nights. Travel restrictions and T's and C's apply.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It is 12:33. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues. Questions in need of answers. The hardest sporting feat. A few of you, I like that phrase. It all seems a bit stick and pub based. And now flipping Sarah in Birmingham's kicked off all the golf balls. Texting in to say, the journey from starting golf to playing every golf course to par is serious. You've got to take that one on the chin. You couldn't be more wrong. Golf is arguably the hardest sport. That's not the question! The question is, what is the hardest achievement? What's the greatest achievement in solo sport? So it can't be just playing golf, can it? Because that's easy. And neither can it be pole vaulting, because that's improvable every day. As you know, whatever the record is, someone can beat it, but you can never get more than a maximum break. Don't at me about fouls and things like that. You can never get more than 147 points in one visit to a snooker table. So what would it be? You can never get fewer than 8-9 darts to finish a 501 game of darts. It just can't be done. What was the other one? I can't remember. So 13 under, maybe. You can have that as golf, but not just playing golf. What about archery? Archery could be in this one, couldn't it? What's the heart? We're never going to know. It's a killer question, that, from Ben. And it's his birthday. John's informed me. John, question or answer?
Go on, answer, James.
Carry on.
I thought you might have known this one, actually, because of the connection to one of your favourite Victorians.
Oh, not him. You know, I went out for lunch the other day and he was at the next table.
Oh.
My luncheon companions thought it was the funniest thing they'd ever seen. I didn't know what had happened. They were all looking over it. I arrived a bit late and they're all pointing over and I look over there and there he is, the Victorian Undertaker, having a, I don't know what he was having for his lunch, probably a child. Go on.
So I believe the biggest privately owned prop house in the country is Wentworth Woodhouse.
Right. What's that got to do with Rees Mogg?
The ancestral home of his wife.
Oh, is it? Okay. Oh, blimey. And it is privately owned still to this day?
I believe it is, yeah. And the reason I know this is because there was a bit of furore a few years ago about them receiving some government money for some restoration or renovation project they were doing up there.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't think it's still in his family, in her family.
No, I don't think it is. I think that was the thing. It's got nothing to do with that.
Where
family,
is it? Is it in Yorkshire?
I think it's near Yorkshire. Yeah,
yeah. I had a feeling it was in Yorkshire, and it looks a tiny bit like Castle Howard in that sense of the width of it being, which is also in Yorkshire. I think qualifications. You remember it from a few. That'll do nicely. You've done it. You're over the line.
Thank you very much for everything you do, James.
There we go. And of course, John, lovely work. 12:36 is the time. Mehmet is in Walthamstow. Mehmet, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
I want to know why snow is white.
It's the same reason as bubbles. It's because of the light diffracting through. Oh. Well, what colour would you expect it to be?
Well, see-through, like water. It's water, isn't it?
Yeah, so then it freezes, and it. But the light can't get through it. Oh,
what about ice? Ice is see-through.
Yeah.
It's got bubbles in it sometimes. It's still see-through.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. But it's not see-through if it freezes in a certain way, is it? You know, there's frost in your freezer that is also ice. You mean ice cubes?
Yeah, yeah.
So, icebergs?
Yeah, they're white as well.
Often.
But why are they white?
Yeah. It's to do with light, but you're not going to accept that as an answer, and frankly, nor should you.
No, mate.
Who's whistling in the background?
The copper going by.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
What, there's a police officer walking down Walthamstow High Street whistling like something out of the 1950s?
It's a police van. He's chasing all the crims.
Oh, he's not going to sell many ice creams going at that speed. I will find out for you why is Snow White. I feel I should know. I feel I've let you down. I thought that was actually someone whistling. I didn't. That was actually a siren, was it? God, you can tell I'm ready for the holidays. 12:37 is the time. Thank you, Mehmet. Jane's in Northampton. Jane, question or answer?
Answer, Jane.
Right, go.
Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. You too.
So the hardest achievement, you're welcome, is an iron distance triathlon. The only person to have gone sub 7 hours. Sorry, first person to go sub 7 hours this year. So that's a 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike ride, and then run a full marathon.
Yeah.
In under 7 hours was achieved this year by Christian Blumenfeld in June.
Yeah, but next year someone will do it in less time.
No, it won't,
yes, they
it won't
will.
Be done again.
They will.
It won't be done again.
Of
it
course
won't.
They said that about Roger Bannister when he ran a 4-minute mile. It's not an objective achievement. It's just the latest, it's the best yet.
It's the hardest achievement.
It's not the best yet because someone will beat it. He will probably beat it himself.
Oh, I very much doubt it.
Don't be so unsupportive. Call yourself a fan.
Well, James.
Well, yeah, I can't now, unfortunately. I've got a dodgy knee. Otherwise, I'd have been out there. I'd have been all over it. But you see what I mean? Someone will beat it. It's not like a maximum break in snooker.
So well, actually, no one we've can got ever to repeat it.
No, you can't. It's the hardest thing to do, like a 9-dart finish in darts. I grant you, physically, the challenge of an Ironman triathlon is greater than a 9-dart.
Do a 9-dart finish again. Someone can do a 1:47 break again.
Yeah, but they can't beat it. They can't beat it. It's a self.
The hardest achievement. Only two men have ever gone under 7 hours. 9 men have gone on a 59 on a golf course, so that one can't win.
No, I'm crossing that one off the list because theoretically someone could do it in 58. So that's off the list. That was Ben's misleading question. It's darts at the moment. It's down to darts and snooker.
Statistically, what's the most difficult? And I'm saying only two men have ever done this.
Yeah, but that is a statistic.
So
but it's
one
not
one person.
Yeah.
His question was statistically.
Yeah, but no.
Replay the tape. I demand a steward's inquiry.
You're not having a steward's inquiry, madam, because how many people have tried to do a try? That would be another.
Hundreds of thousands.
Well,
of
not as many have had a game of darts, have they? I don't think you can have this is all going horribly wrong. Poor old Ben. It was his birthday as well, and he thought it was a brilliant question. I've got the parameters of the question I'm taking on trust, and I think I understood Ben better than you do.
Listening to the podcast.
It's a one-off. It's a thing that can't be improved upon but can be repeated.
Yeah. I still have students' inquiries.
No, you can have all the inquiries you want. I'm in charge. Why is Snow White? Can you eat mould on cheese that is not deliberately mouldy? Done the biggest house. And what's the hardest sporting feat? So it has to be something that can't be improved upon. Steward's inquiry or not, you can't improve upon it. Thank you, Jane. Jonathan is in Saint-Gervais-les-Bains en France. Jonathan, I don't know the French for question or answer, unfortunately. Question ou réponse?
Yeah. Réponse.
Réponse, that was it. Question ou réponse?
Yes, it was on the biblical names.
Oh, no, come off
it. You kind of nailed it, but not the reason why. And
right.
Also, I think it's a bit more interesting than that.
Go on, then.
I mean, the stories were first recorded in Aramaic and then passed through Greek.
Yes.
And through Latin.
Yes.
And then most of the names we use are then anglicised versions of Norman French. So it's that like 5 translation process.
Yes.
So he, Jesus wasn't even called Jesus. He was called Yehoshua, probably.
Yeshua.
A familiar form of Yeshua.
Yeah, yeah.
And Peter, famously, is not his name at all. It's a nickname. So he was called Cephas, which means the rock or rocky, which is, you know, to my mind, is a bodyguard's name, you know. It's a tough man's name for a tough man. He was Jesus' right-hand man and protector. So, you know, today if someone was called Rocky or The Rock, that would probably tell you something about them.
That's a good
point. Quite a few of them are nicknames. Like Joseph of Arimathea. There's no such place as Arimathea. but the word probably derives from Highlander. So he was probably someone who came from like a mountainous region.
Okay, Joseph from the Joe Hills.
Yeah, Joe from the hills. Yeah,
I like it. So they wouldn't, but Paul, so you're embellishing Paul, on my answer rather than challenging it. So
yeah,
he wouldn't have met anyone called John.
Wrong. You were right. I think it's very interesting where a lot of them came from. Like Paul, obviously, he changes his name from Saul.
When
Paul is from Paulus, which means small, a Latin word. But he was also sponsored by Sergius Paulus. Who was a Roman, quite high-ranking official, who gave Paul like letters of recommendation that protected him.
Gosh.
So Paul may actually have taken on Paulus from his protector rather than, you know, but on this road to Damascus. It actually might have come at a later stage in his evangelism. Onesimus, which is quite niche, but Onesimus is one of...
I'm going to have to stop you now because the Bible's very long.
I could go on.
I know you could. How long till we get to Revelations? What are your qualifications?
I've written a book called The Tongues of Men or Angels.
Wow.
Which is about the early days of Christianity. It's very much about Paul and what a small sect of Judaism effectively the process by which that turned into a cult that accepted Gentiles first of all, and then spreads throughout the sort of Mediterranean seaboard by Paul.
It's a novel.
It's a novel, but it's simultaneously my genuine, extremely well researched view
fascinating.
On what most probably happened.
You've rung in before, and we were mentioning a different book that we were mentioning
I
think.
Miners' Strike.
That was it. You'd written a book about the Miners' Strike. This could be the greatest sporting achievement. Ringing Mystery Hour twice on two different subjects when both times your qualification is a book you've actually written. Keith says everyone's written a book.
Strange.
Get lost, Keith. You haven't written a book. Honestly. I love that. So Jonathan Tregell. Jonathan Tregell.
Jonathan Tregell. Yeah.
There we go. I like the sound of that one. I like the sound of the other one as well. I read the other one. I read the other one. It's brilliant.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, you're
very
welcome.
Kind of you.
I should have thanked you sooner, really. You sent it about 2 years ago. And the tongues of men or angels, which is a kind of play on Corinthians, isn't it? The line, the tongues of angels, if I speak with the tongues, something like that.
It's the bit that always gets read out at weddings.
Yes.
If I speak the tongues of men or angels but have not love, I am nothing. I'm just a clanging bell or a crashing cymbal.
There it is. Well, what's James? What's the derivation of James?
The most interesting thing to me about James is that Jesus had a brother called James the Just, who was quite well attested to in the at the time in the writings of Josephus and people.
Who
went on to be almost like a rival high priest for a period after Jesus' death,
like Prince Harry.
A bit, yes, very, very much the Prince Harry of his day.
Who did James the Just marry? Did he marry someone really cool, and everyone else got their hump?
I think he was probably kind of an aesthete. I think he probably remained celibate, which I sort of feel that probably Jesus did too. Although I know a lot of people think.
Sure, and careful, mate. It's Christmas. Let's not start this cat among the pigeons. For heaven's sake.
Okay.
I love that. It's a brilliant qualification as well, Jonathan. Have another round of applause on me.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. That's it. That's set the bar high for qualifications. What are your qualifications? I've written a book about, a deeply researched book about precisely this point. I love it. 12:46 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
And there it is. 12:48 is the time. I've got to pick a winner this week. That's going to be tricky. Mystery Hour continues. Let's go to Daniel in Chesterfield. Daniel, question or answer?
Question, please.
How old are you, mate?
11.
Fantastic. Are you enjoying your holidays? When did you break up?
Just yesterday.
Oh, fantastic. And what are you hoping to get for Christmas, Daniel?
A new gaming chair.
A game chair?
Yeah, a new gaming chair.
Oh, wicked. That's what all the cool people say, by the way. Wicked. I don't know if anyone's told you that. It's probably a bit young yet. Question. What's your question?
My question is, you know, like, relevant to the World Cup that was just on?
Yeah.
How do football players, like, in the middle of a football match, like, so far away from half-time, how are they able to hold it when they're really desperate for the toilet? Like, how are they supposed to?
I think I've seen a player once or twice. I've seen a player leave the pitch, but that would be more... I think that's going to be more diarrhea than needing a wee, don't you?
Yeah.
And I have to tell you that I don't know if this is suitable. What time is it? 10 to 1. Do you know what happened to Gary Lineker in Japan?
No. I've only just started watching, like, football.
Do you know who Gary Lineker is?
I've heard of his name before.
He's the fella that presented all the World Cup games on the BBC over the last World Cup he was on. Did you watch Sports Personality of the Year last night?
No.
No. You were playing games, weren't you?
Yeah.
He does that as well. He was, I don't know how to put this, I've got to put this quite delicately, Daniel, but he kind of did a poo on the pitch. and then he had to sort of slide his bum around on the grass afterwards so that he could carry on playing. But he didn't know he was going to do a poo on the pitch. I think he thought he was just going to do a windy pop. He thought he was going to do a windy pop and a bit of poo came out. So he had to kind of... He might be listening, actually. He's not going to be able to get through if he is. He could come through on my secret private personal line, but that's been blocked at the moment by someone else. So I think they can, if they absolutely need to, they can go for a wee. But if they go just before they come on and then they go again at half time, they're probably going to be okay, don't you think?
Yeah.
So they could run off. There's no rule against just running off straight down the tunnel into the toilet. Quick number one. Pull the flush, back out again. Hopefully no one's noticed. Depends how big the crowd is. But they'd very, very, very rarely have to because, you know, come on. You do a wee just before you started. Unless you've drunk like 10 gallons of orange juice or something like that, you're not going to need another one until at least half time, are you?
Mm.
So that is the answer to why. Has it ever happened to you?
No.
No, well, there you go. So don't drink lots of pints before you go on the pitch, Daniel, all right?
Yep.
And you'll be okay. Round of applause for me. Thank you very much. And happy Christmas, Daniel. I hope Santa...
Happy Christmas to you too. I love your mystery hour.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. God, it's going to be a tough one this week, isn't it? 12:52 is the time. Ian is in Aberdeen. Ian, question or answer?
Hello, James. It's an answer.
Fantastic. It wasn't in Japan. It was Italia 90, wasn't it, when Lineker did the business on the pitch? Sorry. I've just given Daniel fake news. It's his first interaction with mainstream media, and he's been given dodgy information. This is outrageous. Oh, anyway, carry on.
Cheese-making mould.
Oh, yes.
Mould on cheese.
Yes.
The consensus among cheesemakers is that the only mould you need to worry about is black.
Okay.
Any other colour will not damage you, but at the end of the day, your nose is the best guide. If it smells bad, don't eat it.
Yeah.
And I mean, really smells bad.
And if you've got a bit of mould on a piece of cheddar, just cut it off and crack on?
Well, there's nothing wrong with eating it, but it'll taint the taste of the cheese, so it'll spoil the cheese. So that's the only reason for cutting it off. It's not because it's dangerous to eat, but because it'll change the taste of the cheese.
And black mould is scary wherever it is. Frankly.
Black mold is scary.
Yeah.
Some molds are really predatory.
Okay.
Like the blue mold, Penicillium Rot 40, is very predatory indeed. I mean, I make cheese at home, and you never make blue cheese at the same time as you're making other cheeses because the blue will go everywhere.
It will invade. It's a very
and the white one that's on brie or camembert.
That rind is mold, is it?
That's predatory as well. That's another Penicillium.
Qualifications?
Home cheesemaker for 2 years. I've made about 80 cheeses, and I'm in the process of trying to write a book about it.
What a lovely qualification that is. What did you start on? What cheese did you start on?
Brie.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
That's going in quite hard, isn't it? Or soft?
Actually, no. I did cheddar as well, but cheddar is really difficult.
What's the easiest? Brie?
Brie, when I teach people, I make brie.
You've only been doing it for 2 years and you're already a teacher. You're a fast developer.
Yeah. Well,
teach people online as well. I taught a girl in Alaska not long ago.
To make cheese?
Yeah.
Mm. Who taught you?
Who taught me?
Jesus of Nazareth. Sorry, that's not even a very funny joke.
I've had a brother in Australia who's been making it for 40 years, and I never thought I could compete with him, so I didn't try. But I basically knew what the process was.
There's a lesson there for all of us, isn't there?
Yeah.
Better to have loved and lost than to have never loved at all, as it were. Better to have tried and failed than to have never tried at all. I love that, and you get a lovely round of applause as well.
Just before I finish, I just want to thank you for how much of a role you've played in so many people's lives.
Thank you, Ian.
Sorry.
Well, no, that's a lovely thing to say. And I'd rather have had cheese. But in the absence of cheese, your warm words are very... Thank you. I do know what you mean when you say that, and it means just as much to me as it does the other way around. So thank you. 12:55 is the time. Gosh. Ooh, Graham's in Holsworthy in Devon. Graham, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Go on, then.
The achievements in sport, difficult achievements.
Bog off, honestly. I wish Ben had never rung in with this question now. Someone's saying it would be an 18-hole golf course in 18 holes, 18 shots.
Yes, that did spring to my mind.
Yeah?
The ultimate achievement.
But it's impossible.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
No, it's not better. I'm talking cricket.
You can't. You can't talk cricket.
A bowler taking all 10 wickets.
No, because the batsmen are incredibly important to that.
Well,
so are the fielders. A fielder might drop it.
So, yeah.
No.
Batsmen are hitting six sixes in and over there.
Again, doesn't matter, does it? Because if he's doing dolly drops, you could smack him out of the park. But if you're up against James Anderson, you're not going to hit six sixes.
Yeah, well, the ten wickets in and over.
Why are you still trying? You can't take 10 wickets in and over.
No, in an innings. In an innings.
Then it depends who you're up against. You could take 10 wickets against, you know, Bozo's 11 or 10 wickets against the Windies. It's too complete.
Very, very rarely happens, though.
I know it very rarely happens.
I give up now. I'm going.
Thank you. Good.
Thank you.
Bye. Happy Bye. Christmas. Roy's in Harrow. Roy, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Go on.
Hi, James.
Hello.
Achievement, the solo achievement. Now, you mentioned 147 is the highest.
Don't you dare talk to me about free balls. If you talk to me about free balls, I'm going to ban you from the programme forever. All right, carry on.
That's what it's about. 155 is possible.
With a free ball?
With a free ball.
That's not the point of the question, is it? Because you can't control... Right.
No, you can't control... that's what I was going to throw in as well. You can't control it, and it's very... rare that it happens that you gain a free ball off.
But it's not. Is it? I mean, I suppose technically it's a greater achievement than a 147, isn't it? Because it involves potting more balls.
Yeah, it's two more balls.
And if I were feeling really pedantic, I would point out that the 147 depends upon how the break has gone from the previous shot. Or the previous shots, plural.
You can manipulate the balls as you're potting. So you can sort of
I'm not having it. I'm not having it. It's too it's too esoteric.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I didn't think, you know, but I'm
also is it harder than pole vaulting?
yes.
I would have said that as well.
The achievement because you don't get a chance to achieve it, no matter how good you are. You could be Bonnie O'Sullivan on the table.
Exactly that, and you'd never get a chance in your life. So 10-pin bowling's getting quite a lot of votes. Getting a perfect go at 10-pin, but nah, that's easy. I've done it loads of times. Thank you, Roy. Last one on this. Johnny's in Nottingham. Johnny, question or answer?
It's Joni, but answer.
Joni, sorry, as in Mitchell.
Yeah.
That's it. You don't know what you've got till it's gone. Carry on.
Yeah. Answer.
Carry on.
Why is Snow White?
Why is Snow White what? Sorry, let's start again. I've done this before, you haven't, so obviously it's totally unfair of me to bombard you with imbecilic comments and asides. Why is Snow White, Joni?
So Snow's made out of lots of crystals, so it's like crystals of water, and when light scatters off it, and it will scatter off all the different wavelengths of light because the crystals are kind of like randomly orientated and stuff. So it's like reflects all the different colours of the rainbow, which when we look at it, it kind of all adds up to make white.
Yeah, that'll do. Qualifications?
Yeah, I study physics.
Ooh, very nice. And that gets that one there. Well played, yeah, lovely stuff. It's a tough one, this, isn't it? I'm going to play to the crowd on this one and give it to Daniel because he's only 11 and he'll be able to play the Mystery Hour ball game with the whole family. If you've missed that, well done, Daniel. Congratulations. If you need a wee while you're playing the Mystery Hour ball game, don't do it in the sitting room. Make sure you go to the toilet, all right? And I missed a trick on Martin's question. Who answered Martin's question? It doesn't matter now because I've given the game to Daniel. But the cheese question, Ian, there, I should have gone on Blessed Are the Cheesemakers. For they shall inherit the earth. But I didn't, and it's too late now. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Global Player or on the whole show podcast, where you'll also find all of LBC's shows to catch up on, as well as to stay up to date with the latest news from LBC. Download Global Player for free from your app store or head to globalplayer.com. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Sawbrick. But now, it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
I'm exhausted before I've even started.